This is the Faherty Podcast presented by Farmers Insurance.
Thank you. You know, there's a saying that nearly everybody of a certain age can utter with a sense of wistful jealousy: youth is wasted on the young. These words were most likely uttered by another Irishman, George Bernard Shaw, but he's not around to take credit, so I'll just give it to him. Shaw was answering the question, what is the most beautiful thing in the world? Youth, he replied, is the most beautiful thing in the world, and what a pity that it has to be wasted on children. Shaw likely had little recollection of his own childhood. He was Irish. No, I'm just saying. I have a fine recollection of my childhood. It's the middle years that are lost in the swirling mists of time. But people tell me I had a hell of a good time. My guests tonight, Scott McCarron and Steve Pate, might have a different point of view because neither of them were raised on the old sod. And both of the old goats at the age of 50 found their way to golf's fountain of youth, the PGA Tour champions. Welcome, guys, and thank you for joining me here on the Faherty Show. I was first introduced to golf by my father, caddying in Northern Ireland. How did you make it with the ball sticking hole?
Well, I was introduced to golf by my father also. He was a professional baseball player, played shortstop for the St. Louis Cardinals and Chicago Cubs, 58 through 62. When he quit playing baseball, he started playing golf. So when I was born in 65, literally my first toy as a kid was a golf club.
Yeah, and when I was a kid, my parents were new to the game and both very avid. I remember hitting balls into a net in the backyard when I was maybe 5 or 6 years old. My dad setting that up. He was pretty insane about golf.
We played together right at the end of my career, all of us, and I never thought I'd be here doing this. Did you think you'd be, you know, here playing golf for a living at this age?
You know, it's amazing to me. I played at UCLA right behind Steve Pate here, and I wasn't even good at to make our golf team, our college golf team.
No, so, but you almost made the tennis team.
But I almost made the tennis team. I did try out for the tennis team, and I lost in the finals to be on the tennis team. So, but again, I did not see at that time that I would have a career playing golf for a living. I mean, I still pinch myself that at 52, I'm still doing the sport I love.
Is he a youngster?
He is. He's a kid. Yeah, I was an assistant coach when he was a freshman. That's why he has such tremendous respect for me.
Yes, I do. For my elders.
What is it about, you know, the PGA Tour champions that people that have had no regular tour career can come out here and have tremendous success? I mean, you don't see it very often, right? But it does happen.
It does. And you've got to be a really good amateur player. I mean, I get guys back at my home club saying, oh, yeah, I got 3 or 4 years. I'm going to practice, get ready for the Champions Tour. Well, yeah, good right. luck. I mean, these guys that make it, the Mike Goodises, the Alan right. Doyles, the Rod Spittles, I mean, these guys were really good amateur players before they turned pro to try to chase it.
Yeah, and it's difficult for them because they don't have any access. They're starting from ground zero. And it's fascinating to me to see the guys that are successful because mm-hmm. I know how hard it is. I mean, I got to step up because I had a tour career, and it's still not that easy.
Yeah.
It's amazing to watch, and they all work incredibly hard.
Yeah.
Scott, you had a moment when Jack put his arm around your shoulder. Tell us a little bit about that.
He put his arm on my shoulder, and he said to me, I have one regret in life, that I didn't play more on the Champions Tour. I loved playing out there with my friends. I love the competition. I wish I would have played more. That just shows you how good it is out here on this mm-hmm. PGA Tour Champions, how good the competition is, how good the camaraderie is. This could be the best time of our lives.
Golfers have incredible memories. If you were to think of the best time in your career, what would it be?
Other than being here right now?
Yes.
Ryder Cup. I was fortunate enough to play in 2 Ryder Cups, and that was just different than everything else. Generally, I got friends and family that care what I do, and that's about it. Ryder Cup, you've got a lot of people caring about what you do, and it's a totally different situation. I just loved it.
Steve, what is it that makes you such a tough match player?
Those of us with ADD, it's you either win or you lose. You don't wait for 4 days to see how you did. And I really am comfortable in it, and I enjoy it, and I play with zero fear.
I never thought of it that way.
That's good.
Yeah, he's different.
He is different.
Yeah, no question about that. Steve, you and I were both rookies in the 91 Ryder Cup at Kiawah Island. There was an interesting incident that happened on the Saturday night.
We were going in for the formal dinner. Car in front of us stopped. We hit them going about 15 miles an hour, and the car behind us whacked us going about 30. And at that point, I was on the floor sitting sideways, and I took a shot to the side. It hurt.
Yeah. Well, I was two cars in front, and we actually screeched to a halt when the lady I was with distracted the driver, and the car behind us almost hit us, and the car behind that almost hit them, and then you were the car behind that, and you hit. So it was actually, you know, partially my fault.
So I should kind of get an attorney and have him talk to you.
I think there's a statute of limitations on that. At least I hope there is. Yeah. Well, the U.S. won that by half a point.
Yes.
You got a half a point.
I did.
You did?
I did.
Following Steve's cup-clinching accident in 1991, there was a more serious smash-up in 1996. But Steve recovered and was named the PGA Tour Comeback Player of the Year in 1999.
So you thought after the accident that maybe you wouldn't play again?
Wasn't sure, and then I was able to play and finished third, fifth, seventh, fourth, and things slowly got better, and I just played very, very well that year. I think I finished third at Augusta, which was obviously pretty special. Ended up getting being captain's choice for the Ryder Cup.
What are the nagging injuries that you deal with, you know, from the automobile accidents?
Well, that one, my left hip has never really worked the same since.
No.
The one in 96, I broke my wrist, my arm, my face, nothing. Don't know what kind of internal damage I did. And then just general arthritis and being old.
Your face hasn't really recovered.
It really hasn't.
It hasn't.
No, never had. We were hoping it was an improvement.
They offered plastic surgery in the hospital in Indio, California, and I opted not to do that.
How do you both feel about the youngsters that we have out there today? You know, Justin Thomas, John Rahm, Tony Finau, Bryson DeChambeau.
You know, I admire what they do, and when I watch a golf tournament, it's like, wow, it's impressive, but I don't relate to it. I would rather watch senior golf or ladies golf. I don't relate to a 7-iron going 210 yards and stopping on something like that.
It's unbelievable.
I'd rather watch a ball roll out and have to control your ball flight, where you have to control your ball flight and your curvature more.
Yeah, sounds like a grumpy,
maybe I'm just jealous because I know I'll never be able to do that.
He probably wants to roll back the ball too.
Yeah. Everybody's but mine.
That's right. I'm amazed. I think golf is in good hands right now. I mean, Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, Justin Thomas, they're great golfers. They're great guys. They come off a lot of camaraderie out there on the PGA Tour right now. People are interested. Those guys are big on social media. They're getting more people involved in golf that might not be coming out to watch tournaments. So, you know, I think it's good for golf, but they do play a game that I'm not familiar with. I mean, they hit the ball so far. They drive it so far.
Maybe I should learn to use social media, and I would appreciate it.
Maybe if you'd ever send an email, that would be a good start.
That might be a start, too.
Don't ever email them. You won't get them back.
Scott, you were very supportive of the new Masters champion, Patrick Reed, who's been a guest on my show. I enjoyed him, you know, very much. Who's the Patrick Reed that you know?
You know, the Patrick Reed I know. I was at the Shark Shootout and working for Golf Channel as an on-course commentator the year that his wife, Justine, had the issue in the bathtub. Mm-hmm. And I got a call from Patrick asked if I could fill in for him at the Pro-Am. The next day, because he wasn't going to be able to play. And I said, absolutely. My wife and I went to the hospital. We sat with him for about an hour. You know, he cried. I saw a different side of Patrick Reed. Yeah, he is very competitive. He is very self-assured. The guy is really, really good. He's the guy you want on your team. He's the guy you want on your Ryder Cup team, President's Cup team, any type of team event. So I saw that in a different side of Patrick Reed than some of the other people say. And to him to win the Masters, I couldn't be happier for them.
Steve, what are you seeing him?
An unbelievable competitor. Mm-hmm. I mean, after watching what he did at the Ryder Cup, I was stunned at the analysis before the final round of Augusta that more people were not thinking he was going to win.
Scotty, you got a thing for SpongeBob. What's that about?
The SpongeBob was for my kids. That was a good luck charm that I carried around for quite a few years with my kids. So that was a little SpongeBob, little trinket that you could sit on the golf bag. So I watched way too many episodes of SpongeBob SquarePants back in the day.
So have I.
Yes.
Yeah, who lives in a pineapple under the sea?
Under the sea.
SpongeBob SquarePants. Mm-hmm. No, I've never seen it.
Well, there's nothing more ego-boosting than having a kid approach you and ask you for your autograph. How do you guys handle it?
I think it's fantastic to have someone actually wanting your autograph. You know, we've been doing signing autographs since we got on the PGA Tour, and now we're doing out here on the PGA Tour Champions. I hope it doesn't stop. It's when they stop asking for your autograph. Yeah. That's the problem.
Yeah, it never ceases to amaze me. It's been going on for 35 years, and especially when it's coming from kids, it's a little boost to the ego.
Who were your golf heroes growing up?
Jack Nicklaus, obviously. He was the best player by a long shot. But then when I really got into golf, there were three players that came out at the same time: Ben Crenshaw, Bill Cratchit, and I can't remember who the third one was.
That's what happens when you get old. Right there.
That's it.
No, gosh.
Champions
what an idiot.
Moment.
Let me do that again. Obviously, it was Jack Nicklaus, Bill Cratchit, Ben Crenshaw, Tom Watson, all came out about the same time.
How about you, Scotty?
Jack's my hero. I mean, he was the guy, when I was a kid growing up, we had about eight guys that played golf. And before we'd start the round, someone would say, I'm Nicklaus, I'm Palmer, I'm Miller, you know.
I was always Trevino.
You want to be Trevino?
Yeah, I had it left to right, and I was full of
I can see that.
Yeah.
You still are. But I moved to Silverado Country Club in Napa Valley, 75-76, 1975.
Johnny Miller.
That's where he lived. And so he was the guy at the time beating everybody. So he was kind of my hero, especially living there and getting to practice with him a little bit. But there were a couple other guys that were there that were on the PGA Tour. Ron Cerruto, Jimmy Wickers, and Rod Funseth. And they all lived at Silverado. And I played a lot of golf with those three guys, and they taught me how to gamble. And they taught me how to hit shots under pressure. Ron Cerruto was one of the best bunker players on the PGA Tour at that time.
Did you kind of dream of being a professional golfer at that stage?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, seeing these guys going out and playing the PGA Tour, coming back, you know, having what I thought were nice homes and being at a country club, I thought that's what I want to do. I want to play golf for a living.
When you dreamed about it, and I assume you both did, what did you imagine the life of a professional golfer would be?
Pretty much what it turned out to be.
Really? You got it right?
I got it right. And, I mean, I was kind of a dumb kid. I didn't really want to be a pro golfer. I knew I was going to be, which was absolutely idiotic, but it worked out well. I couldn't imagine having a job. I couldn't imagine putting on a suit and tie.
And how did you get the moniker, the Volcano?
I tomahawked a driver in a parking lot in Palm Springs.
In the parking lot?
I had one in my trunk of my car. I'd finished bogey at the Palmer course, which gets you run over. And I went to my car, and a driver I didn't like, I swung it as hard as I could at the parking lot on the concrete. The head was gone, and it landed about 5 seconds later, 300 yards over there.
Persimmon or metal?
Oh, no, it was metal.
Metal?
It absolutely could have killed me. Absolutely would have killed me if it hit me in the head.
Yeah, you once tackled a tee marker that offended you as well? Probably more than one.
A tee sign I tackled.
It was a sign?
It was a sign supported by 4x4s. And I got about a 30-yard running head start. Shoulder tackle. It was nice, and broke it off. And I'm holding a sign that's 8 feet high. I didn't really know what to do with it. Set it down gently and went on my way.
I got one quick story on his Volcano.
Oh, please.
We're at a championship event in Des Moines just 2 years ago, and I walk over to go tee off, and I get to the putting green, and I'm getting there putting, and there's a broken putter stabbed right in the middle of the putting green. I'm thinking, what is going on?
Did it have a little sign?
Bader goes,
Pate?
He was still there. He goes, yeah, that was mine. I had to break it before I started.
Sometimes you need to get it out of the way before you got to warm up every aspect of your game.
Oh, yeah.
First of all, but... You know, it's funny. There was a time when getting that angry would actually help me play better.
Yeah.
And it really doesn't anymore.
No.
But it did for a long time.
Where was the turning point where did you decide, yeah, you know, maybe I should?
I didn't really decide. I just got tired.
Yeah?
Yeah. It takes a lot of energy. And I don't have that kind of energy anymore.
He still has that energy, trust me. It's still in there.
It's in there somewhere.
It's in there.
You know, sometimes emotion works for a player, and sometimes it doesn't. We've got a bunch of guys now that, and social media has got a lot to do with it as well. You know, you can't show as much as you used to, or it's actually going to cost you a fortune. You know, I mean, how does it work for you?
Well, it's interesting. It wasn't seen as much as it is now. I mean, some of the best players in the world, you know, you're able to watch just about every shot they hit. So if Rory McIlroy throws a club in the water at Doral,
which was excellent.
It was a great toss.
I applauded that.
And he got the club back the next day.
Yeah.
That's amazing. John Rahm, who's a guy who wears his emotions on his sleeve. The public is seeing every shot these guys hit. And if they say something or do something, it's blown way out of proportion with Twitter.
Tiger was a good example.
And Tiger was certainly a good example of that. So I don't think we got to see, you know, Tommy Bolt's every shot back in the day. And if you did, it would have been epic.
Yeah. It is kind of fun, though, to see some emotion like that. I mean, occasionally equipment just needs punishing.
It does. It needs to die.
People used to come out to watch him play just to see a car wreck. You know? That was it.
No.
Yeah.
Seldom disappointed.
Yeah.
More Faherty will continue after a few words from our sponsor.
Why is Farmer supporting my show? Well, I've interviewed over 100 guests, ranging from legendary golfers to presidents to celebrities. And just like Farmers is smarter from their unbelievable but true experiences, from each of my interviews I've gained great knowledge that I can carry forward. Well, from most of them. Anyway, thank you, Farmers, for supporting my show.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
All right, then. Now back to the show. Well, this is where we find out how much you know about each other. This is where you give me intelligent answers to my asinine questions. It's rapid fire. Stop the clock. Beer or wine?
Wine.
Guilty pleasure?
Ice cream.
You should be guilty most of the time. Jeans or slacks?
Jeans.
Come on. Yeah. Fridays or Mondays?
Fridays.
Fridays, really? I used to miss the cut on Friday.
Yeah. No cut out here anymore.
That's true, yeah. What's the favorite club in your bag?
The one that's not broken.
Correct. If you were a dog, what breed would you be?
Labrador.
Yeah?
Yeah, same. Retriever, yeah.
I was going to go mongrel.
Chase stuff and sleep all day.
If you were a car, what make or model would you be?
Ford F-150 Raptor.
That's what I drive.
Yeah.
1969 Camaro.
Ooh. In match play, if you could play and crush someone just once, who would it be?
Tiger Woods.
My brother.
Favorite course from your days at UCLA?
Baroque art. I took that class.
If it's Baroque, we'll fix it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yes.
Whoa, I was going a different direction with that. I was thinking golf courses.
So was I. Yeah, that's excellent. All right, that's rapid fire with McCarron and Pate. As always, you win nothing. Scott, tell me about the 1996 Freeport McDermott.
Yeah, my first win on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, and you were up against, what, Tom Watson and Johnny Miller?
Yeah, one of my boyhood idols, Tom Watson, in a day that was blowing 30 miles an hour. And it was a really interesting time in my life in that I was on the PGA Tour, but I just barely kept my card the year before. And we actually spent my last night of that San Antonio together. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah,
but
I do.
We did. And if I didn't make the cut that week, that Friday night, I would have lost my tour card by like $2,000. And coming down the stretch, trying to beat Tom Watson on a blustery day.
He's kind of good on those days.
You couldn't go up against a tougher competition than Tom Watson on a day like that. I was very fortunate. I had like a six-shot lead going to the last hole, and I remember standing on the tee going, can I make a 10 and still win this thing? You know, all these thoughts going through your head. But once I got on the green and made bogey to win by 5, I mean, it was just quite a thrill. And 2 weeks later, here I am going to the Masters.
Yeah.
Amazing.
You got a nice note from Davis Love?
I did. I walked right into the locker room there, and I got a note from Davis Love that said, congratulations on the win. Welcome to Augusta. And that's really meant a lot to me.
Yeah, and when after playing Augusta, you had some special cards printed?
I had some business cards printed that I think said 47-hole leader of the Masters. I didn't win, but I held the lead on Saturday in 99 playing with Jose Maria Lazabal. In the final group, I birdied 11 to take the lead, only to make triple on 12, and I think I doubled 13, and that was it. Never heard from me again.
Golf's a funny game. Tell me a funny story.
Yeah, I got a funny story from back in the mini tour days where we used to carry our own bags. We're playing down in Southwest Florida, and I'm playing with a guy who hooks it way over into this big, tall, grassy area. I mean, just grassy like that, but there was a kind of walking path through it. And so we go over there to try to help him find his golf ball, and about 3 minutes into it, we find his golf ball, and the other two guys, we go up on the green, we're waiting for him and waiting for him and waiting for him, and he's not hitting out. He's not hitting out. And we're like, where is this guy? All of a sudden, he comes walking out of the grass and says, guys, I can't find my golf bag. He dropped his golf bag in the tall grass and can't find his golf bag. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, that was long grass, obviously.
Yeah, it was long grass.
Yeah.
Playing a practice round at the Stanford College tournament with Duffy Waldorf. Duffy had eaten something that didn't quite agree with him.
Right.
And he hits a shot off the fifth tee and kind of squeezes his legs together and says, I'll be back. And he takes his towel out into the woods. And he comes back without a towel. And there's a bathroom 100 yards up the fairway.
You're both UCLA Bruins. What was it that drew you towards Westwood?
Well, for me, UCLA, when I was being recruited to go to college, was number one in the nation. Steve Pate was on that team. Corey Pavin, Jay Delsing, Mickey Okoye. They were the team to beat. So going down there to Westwood, which in itself was really extraordinary, seeing the campus and I went to a football game at the Rose Bowl. I thought, you know, this is pretty cool. This is where I want to be.
Can you sing the Bruin fight song? I mean, please don't. Just tell me whether you can or not.
Not a chance.
Really?
None whatsoever, no.
Okay. We could do an ape clap, though, probably.
Yeah, we can do that.
Probably
yeah,
fight through that one.
What was it like to play on that side with all that talent on it?
It was really quite an experience for me. I was not highly recruited out of high school. I was really good in my own mind, but nobody else's, and it was fun.
That's all that matters?
Yeah, that's all that really matters. And, you know, Corey had been College Player of the Year. Tom Pernice was on the team. Jay Delsing and I were the same year. There was a lot of talent on the team, and it was fun to try to match up with them, and I got my butt kicked a lot, and it was good for me.
Steve, tell us about your path from UCLA to the PGA Tour.
Well, I actually did not graduate in 4 years. I went back for five. And I played mini tours I played Monday mini tours my fifth year of school while I was finishing up my degree.
Whereabouts?
Southern California.
Yes.
Yeah. Golden State Tour.
Mm-hmm.
Monday. Pay your $300 and go tee it up.
And then went to the tour school?
My warm-up for tour school was the Mexican Open at Tijuana Country Club. I shot 157, oh. Missed cut by a million, and I wanted to get my money back for Q school, but I couldn't, so I went and played. And I hit it awful, and I made every putt inside of 30 feet that I had for the first 3 days, and then limped in from there and got my tour card.
Scott, after UCLA, you didn't jump into the professional game. You went into clothing?
My family lived in Napa. We had a golf apparel company. My dad did in Napa, and we lost everything in a flood in 1986. When I graduated college in 88, I talked my dad to going back into that business. So we started this business called Competitor Golf Apparel. So I never thought that at that point I was going to play professional golf. That dream was over.
So how did that change?
You know, that changed really by the 1991 Raley Senior Gold Rush that was at Rancho Marietta, a PGA Tour Champions event at my home course. And I saw like four guys out on the putting green putting with this long putter, which I'd never seen before. And I thought, you know what, I'm gonna try that. And I went home that night, I drank about six Sierra Nevada pale ales. I chopped off the top of a putter. I took a three wood, broke it over my knee, and then I shoved the shaft down the top of the grip.
and it just kind of stopped at about 48 inches. It wouldn't go any farther. It was a little light, so I had to go out to the golf course, which I lived on, with a flashlight and get sand out of the bunker and poured some sand down the shafts to weight it.
As you do.
And then the shaft was rattling around, so I couldn't figure out at that point, not being an engineer, how to get the shaft and stop rattling. But I thought if I chewed some Hubba Bubba bubble gum and wrapped it around the shaft at the bottom, then shoved it down there with the sand, and then it wouldn't rattle anymore, and it worked great. Elmer's glue. Went out the next morning, kind of called in sick to work, putted with it, and said, you know what, I think I can putt with this thing. And I started entering amateur events.
Well, it sounds to me, if you can putt with that thing, you can putt with anything.
You did, and I did. And I almost won the United States mid-amateur at 25 with that putter. And it was the ugliest looking thing you'd ever seen.
Very creative young man.
Very creative. Yeah. It was more like desperate.
There's been some controversy around the long putter. You know, both you and Bernard, you know, came under some pretty intense scrutiny last year. How'd you respond to that?
Well, you know, when people really don't know what you're doing, and Bernard Langer and I were having success with the long putter, they were scrutinizing it, but without really knowing how we do it. My whole thing was educate people. If someone were to call me out and say, hey, I want to see, I'll show you what I do. I'll show you how I can putt without anchoring. I want to teach people that there is other methods to putting. You know, I really wasn't bothered too much about, and it was mostly media. It wasn't players. I never had any player come up and question that. It was mostly just media, and that's being driven, you know, whether it's clicks on Twitter or Instagram or, you know, just trying to get more people to follow. It's negative, and unfortunately, the media tends to go that way. And for all the guys, the media guys that said those things, I said, come out. I'll show you what I do. So at least you understand.
I love this bit. I've got some true or false questions for you about each other. Okay?
Oh, sweet.
Okay.
Steve, in October of 2017, Scott did a U after mistakenly dropping his driver and moving his ball.
True.
Yeah.
That is true.
It's true.
Scott, Steve was admitted to UCLA for his off-the-charts golf game despite really sucky high school grades.
That's probably true. I would be surprised if he had really
good
grades.
Actually, it's false. Steve was an AB student in high school.
Yeah.
Shocking.
Really? That's shocking.
Steve, Scott was President Bill Clinton's partner at the 2012 Humana Challenge.
Sure, why not?
Yeah,
true.
I don't know why not, but it is false. Yeah. Scott, Steve holds the record for 7 consecutive birdies at the 1999 U.S. Open.
True.
It's false as well.
He didn't listen to the question.
It was 1999 U.S. Open?
It was at the Masters. Scott, after starting his golf course designer career, Steve was asked why, and he responded, the PGA Tour needs me. They just don't know it.
That's something he would probably say. True.
That is correct. Yes. Steve, on the occasion of my 100th episode, Scott had the nerve to tell my audience there's no way. I mean, I thought it would maybe last 2 shows.
That's true.
Yes, it is.
That is true.
Yeah, the under was less than 1. No respect. And that is true and false with Scott McCarron and Steve Pate. We're at an age now where, I mean, it really hurts. The nagging injuries that we used to have that we could get rid of. I mean, now they just don't go away.
Well, it's amazing. You go to bed feeling pretty good, and you wake up, and all of a sudden something hurts. It's
hurt
like, where does that
sleeping?
Come from?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, you know, we all played sports as kids, and, you know, falling off your bike, jumping off the roof, tackling each other with no pads, you know, it comes back to haunt you.
Well, you know, all this fitness sweeping over the tour, I've seen you covered in rubber bands or something. What is that about?
That is the mask suit.
It's what?
It's called the mask suit. It's a great looking device. I know it gets a lot of attention. It's strength building. The guy's biggest customers are MMA fighters. They
really?
Have arm attachments. You can get a workout in any plane of motion. I don't need the arm attachments.
When you get out of that suit, do you feel like you can kick somebody's ass?
Yeah, you pretty much do.
Yeah.
You put it on and walk around the block and you're sweating. It's really quite amazing.
I thought it was Forrest Gump's leg braces, what you're wearing. It does. I wasn't sure what that was. It's a workout.
It is.
I'll be darned.
It's nothing but strength training.
Yeah, I just learned something.
What's your exercise regime?
I do. I work out. My wife's a triathlete. She works out quite a bit and a fitness trainer, so.
Ooh, that must be annoying.
Yes, yeah, it is. She can kick my butt in just about every sport. So I work out quite a bit to keep myself in shape. And again, you know, you're out here at 52. I want to be competitive at 60. Look what Langer's doing right now. I mean, it's pretty incredible what he's done.
Speaking of doing the incredible, how Scott brought Jenny to the altar here at the top of the rock on April 23rd, 2016 is a story of inspiration and outlet malls. Two people in love, in a beautiful place, at the right time.
And it was Tom Kite who had just gone through some struggles with his sister in a car accident. He just lost his wife. He came out of the fitness trailer when I was walking in and he grabbed me by my chest and looked me in the eye and he said, if you're ever gonna do anything, do it, don't wait. And then he walked away. It wasn't like he knew what I was thinking. And that just struck me as, you know what? I want to marry this person. So we started at 5 o'clock on Friday, planned the whole thing, and got married Saturday at 6 o'clock. Steve and his wife were there, and about 35 other Champions Tour guys. She got a dress at Dave's Bridal for $150. Exactly. Wedding rings at Kohl's. A Bass photographer, Bass Pro Shop photographer, did the photos, which was odd when he told me to pick her up and put her out farther to make her look bigger.
Peter, how did you get into golf course design?
It's something I was always fascinated with, especially when we started playing TPC courses, which I was not a big fan of, and I kind of wanted to figure out how to make something more like the older stuff.
How does designing golf courses affect how you play the game?
I don't think it does. I think it's the other way around. I think
really?
The way I play affects what I do and try to accomplish designing golf courses. Because when I'm playing, there's such a separation from tournament golf to recreational golf. And as far as designing courses, unless your client wants a really difficult golf course for a tournament,
think about
it's supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
On some level, it's supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
A mix of hard holes, a mix of, you know, and throwing easy holes. Not every hole has to kick your butt.
What are you going to do after you finish playing golf? I mean, you don't need anger management classes anymore.
Hopefully not get really fat again. I'm not sure. Hopefully we get stay busy with the design business. I really enjoy that. There's some other things. We need to get a first tee program going in our area again. Mm-hmm. Would like to be part of that and do some traveling for fun.
Traveling for fun?
Yeah. Viking River cruises really kind of intrigue me.
Does Sherry not want to stay at home?
Guess not. Not with me.
Scotty?
You know, I'd like to play till, you know, I'm 62, 63, if I can stay competitive till then. I did a little bit of announcing, which I enjoyed. I would like to maybe do some of that again. Do a little fishing, do a little hunting, and, you know, really enjoy life.
When you had that little stint at broadcasting, what did you learn about the game?
I learned a lot about, one, broadcasting, how difficult a job it is and how much research and studying you got to do to be prepared. But I learned a lot being an on-course commentator, being right with the players that are trying to win tournaments. I learned how patient the guys were that were winning the tournaments, how impatient or how quick the other guys were that were losing events, to being right there in the hunt when these guys were trying to win events. You could see it in their eyes.
You could see it
in their walk.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the things that I figured out after a little while of being on the ground was I read the greens much better from 40 yards short.
Absolutely.
Your first impression, and as a player, I never thought to do it.
First instinct, when you walk up to a green, you know what it's going to do.
Well, but you can see the slopes blending together from a distance that you can't see when you're up on top of them.
I agree. As you're walking up to a green, looking at what it's going to do, you can see a lot before you even get to the green.
When you look back at your career, are you happy with it?
Yeah, I am. I would say someone else looking back at my career where I was in college or even before I got on the PGA Tour would say that I was an overachiever. I mean, I never should have got on the PGA Tour. I would look back as a little bit of an underachiever. I felt like I could have won more. I felt like I had, the only reason I made it this far, an unwavering belief that this was what I was going to do for a living. And that's what separated me from being on the PGA Tour as opposed to selling shirts for a living.
Peter?
Pretty pleased with what I've done. Think I should have done more than I did, but
playing golf for a living is hard.
Playing golf for a living is hard. I mean, I've been up and down, injured, healthy. Been to a lot of nice places, met a lot of nice people, and got a great family. So there's really nothing to complain about.
Well, I think we can safely say that I've overachieved in having both of you here tonight. Thank you very much.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, appreciate
boys. It. Thank you, sir.
Great friends.
All right.
Scott McCarron and Steve Pate have played the game forever, it seems. McCarron has been a pro for 26 years, and Steve Pate is in his 35th year playing this game and still having a good time doing it. For them and all the members of the PGA Tour champions, continuing to tee it up for fun and profit confirms that golf is a game where it's never too late. Well, that's all for tonight. Thanks for joining me instead of being somewhere else. And if you follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, well, why not? Good night, everyone. Good night, Curtis.
Thanks for joining me, Fegherty fans. You can find more of the Fegherty podcast presented by Farmers Insurance on Fegherty.com and your favorite podcast provider. Go to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Art19, or Google Play. Search Fegherty and subscribe. If you love the show, and why wouldn't you? Be sure to leave a rating, review, and tell your friends.